Blog Talk Radio.
You can't touch this. You can't touch this. You can't touch this. You can't touch this.
Wednesday night, unusual for us, but because of the Super Bowl, we had to do some rescheduling and everything. And let me say this, if you run anything with a wing, you know, you just can't stop it. Simple as that. When it's done right, you just can't stop it. And you know, we got a good show for you tonight. One of my good friends from Virginia and another disciple of Dr. Ward, John Ward, that is. And, you know, then he has done a good job in getting guys prepared to, you know, to coach. You know, Jerry will tell you a little bit more about him, just like Doug talked about him the other night. But I'm excited to have him on. And you know, just good to have these guys come on and talk about their programs and what they do. So without further ado, let me see if I can put the right buttons and get Jerry on here. Jerry, are you there?
Yeah, good evening. How are you?
Hey, Jerry, what's going on, man? How's everything going up there in Virginia?
I can't complain, man.
Y'all getting any snow up there or just crazy weather? Unusual
Christmas. Well, it's been warm today, but they're calling for snow tonight, so maybe I'll get a day off tomorrow.
Oh, man, I tell you, you know, two flicks hits around here and they shut everything down, so I hope we get a little bit of it, too. So what's going on up there in your part of the country, the school and everything?
Well, just same old, same old. We had a tough year as the year before. I had 21 seniors that started, and I graduated. You know, we were fortunate enough to two platoon that year, and the good was I had the best team I ever had, and the bad was this year was a tough rebuilding year with only one returning starter. And nine sophomores in the starting lineup. So, but that's
go ahead. I'm sorry.
I said that's just kind of the nature of the beast coaching high school.
I know about it. You know, I've been on that road several times, and I'm just got to hang on until you get it right. You did your tutelage under Dr. Ward and. No, his name came up a lot the other night, and it came up a lot the week before. What makes you different than Doc Ward, or are you different in what you do from Doc?
Well, I've learned this through trial and error that no matter what you learn from whomever you learn from, you got to be your own man. So I learned a lot from Doc in the regards of practice planning and game planning. The X's and O's, but I think it's deeper than just that. It's just I learned from him the work ethic and what it takes to be successful year in, year out, all around the program.
Mm-hmm. Now, you had a unique beginning. Doc told me when Doc and I traveled up to Wilkes-Barre a lot, and he was telling me your story, and I said, you got to be kidding. That didn't happen. You want to share your story, Doc, how you got involved in coaching and everything?
Yeah, I was when I graduated from college, I did ROTC, and so I went in the Army, and I was stationed at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, and right after 9/11, a couple months after that, I got deployed to Afghanistan and rolled around to start of 03, and I'm in Afghanistan, and I started thinking. I got promoted to captain, and I basically got promoted out of my job of being a platoon leader, and I loved being with the soldiers. And when I got bumped up to be a staff officer, I started thinking about, is this what I want to do with my life? Because as an officer, you spend majority of your time staff and a little bit of time with the troops. And so I started looking at some other options with my life, and I happened to be married, and my wife was at Fort Bragg, so I knew moving away from North Carolina wasn't an option if I had chosen to get out of the Army. And so I started looking, and lo and behold, while I'm in Afghanistan, I meet a guy that's a National Guardsman from Ohio, my home state, and we start talking, and he's a teacher, and he's a football coach. And I told him what my dilemma was, and he said, dude, it's being a football coach is like being a company commander. You got your guys, you got your offensive platoon, your defensive platoon, you got your special teams platoon, and you go to battle every day. And so I started thinking more and more about it, but I only had a BA in history. I didn't have any education background. But I'm looking on the North Carolina High School website, and they have posted jobs, and they had a defensive line opening and a social studies opening at Harnett Central High School. And so I send my resume, and fortunately Doc had heard of the Division III school that I played ball at, and he told me to give him a call. And so I called him from Afghanistan, and the telecommunications back in 2003 to the United States had a delay. And so we had one of those conversations where you ask something and you pause, and then the other person will hear it, and then you talk back, and oftentimes you hear your echo. And so when your echo was done, you knew you could move on with that conversation. And so he went to bat for me to the principal, and I told him I had to have a decision. I was married, and I wasn't about to get out of the Army without a job, and I knew I was in Afghanistan, and I couldn't leave unless I was going to get out of the Army. And so June was my end of service date. And so it was, I think it's around May. And so I make this call to Doc, and he goes and he calls me back and says, you got a job. And so I called the principal, and I had the same conversation with the principal, and he goes, you got a job. So I went into my battalion commander and told him I was getting out of the Army, and about floored him. But nonetheless, I get out of the Army, and I come back and join the world, and I go to work for Doc, coaching the defensive line for him.
So you start out on the defensive side of the ball.
Yes.
What was that experience like working with Doc?
Well, Doc has his own way of doing business, and it's great, because what I love about Doc is he is who he is. As far as the single wing, to tell you the truth, when I got into coaching, I could care less about offense. As a defensive player in college, and all I wanted to do was coach defense. I thought, the girls were over on the offense side of the ball and the men were over on the defense side of the ball, and that was just the attitude I had. And he came in and showed me some film of what they do offensively. I'm like, yeah, who gives a crap? It's all pretty. But then the more I started watching it, I'm like, where in the hell is the ball? Man, your offensive line is blowing the defensive line off the ball. I'm watching the wedge, and I'm just taken back. And I stopped being a coach for a second. I stopped watching what I should have been watching, as a defensive guy, watching the offensive line. I started watching the backfield, and like, wow, this spin stuff's pretty good. But as we got going, I really tried to focus on my job, and I was coach of the defensive line. But the way our practice was set up, when we were on offense, the varsity was on offense, I was in charge of setting up the scout defense. And so I was into that, and I'm trying to give the best look I can to Doc, and I just couldn't stop watching the offense. And I was forcing myself to have to watch the scout defense, but it was just kind of mesmerizing because I'd never seen anything like that. You know, I'd been around the wing tee, but I'd never been around the single wing and the spinner and all that misdirection. So that was really cool. And so I came to the conclusion that if I ever became a head coach, that was the offense I was going to run.
And you, how long did you stay with Doc?
I spent, you know, believe it or not, just 1 year with Doc, and then he left for Union, and I was set to go to Union with him the year removed, and I was all set to go, but then I was in the Army Reserves. I got out of active duty, I was in the Army Reserves, and I went to Iraq, and so that foiled my plans. Because I had left and I got mobilized in the summer, and so before I could finalize the deal to move jobs, I left for Iraq, and so that kind of fizzled, and I ended up going back to Harnett Central before we moved up to the D.C. area. But the funny thing was, the assistant coaches that were under Doc with me hated the single wing. He was a Clemson guy, a Rich Rodriguez disciple, and he wanted to run the spread. But the cats that he inherited had done pretty well under Doc on the varsity and the junior varsity in the single wing. And so he ran a lot of spread, but it was single wing stuff. And he started running some two-back stuff, and he had the back side-by-side, and he was running power. And he was trying to kick out with that back being at 4 yards. And middle of, I don't know, maybe the first week before our scrimmage, he starts moving that back up behind the guard, just like our blocking back, and he started running, you know, the having him kick from there. And I'm over there. I'm still coaching defense, but I'm still doing the defensive setup for our scout team. And I'm like, let me ask you, why are you moving that back up behind the guard? And he's like, well, he has a better angle at kicking out, and we found that it's tough to kick out from 4 yards deep. And I just kind of smiled and said, yeah, you learned something from Doc. And he said, no, he's an H-back, just like Joe Gibbs. And he did not want to tell anybody that he took from single wing. And so I thought that was quite hilarious.
It is funny. And from there, you went to, you said you went to D.C. to coach?
Yeah, we moved to, my wife got the job in Maryland, and so we moved to the Maryland side of D.C. in Montgomery County. And so I got the job at the Avalon School.
Yeah, let me stop you there for a minute, guys. Okay. Here's another coach who completely outkicked the stadium. Okay, you want to talk a little bit about your wife there for a second?
Yeah, my wife is definitely outkicked my coverage. She allows me, her job as a nurse allows me to do this because she makes twice what I make. And so she's a paratrooper, she's a nurse, she's an O5, a commander in the military as a nurse. And so she allows me to do this, and she's the mother of my 5 children, ages 10, 8, 6, 3, and 1. So God love her.
Go ahead, man. I met your wife, and she's a trooper. I know she's very good at what she does.
And she's the like Sue Ward, who I'm pretty close with. The, it takes a special wife to be married to a football coach, and then you know the other things, working full time and having 5 children. So, she got the job up here, and so I followed her. And I carved it on my resume everywhere. And truth be told, I didn't want to be a head coach. I still wanted. I didn't think I was ready, but there had to be a school called the Avalon School that needed a football coach, and I needed a job. And so it was a match made in heaven. And when I got there, I thought we were a little small, and so I hesitated of running single wing right away. I said, "Well, they were a they were kind of a double wing slash spread team. They had run some of that 88 superpower and brown O and black O, but then they also gotten some run and shoot type stuff. And I said, well, I'll just go with that. I've been a defensive coach. And I figured out we weren't very good at, it's like you can't serve two masters. And so I didn't really know the double wing. I was kind of learning it, but I knew the single wing. And so we kind of married up the what I learned from Doc, and then I took that double wing stuff. And so that was kind of my first change from Doc, was we ran 56 and 48 and 38, the full spin and the power from Doc. But then the wing back counter from what's the terminology? Is it a single wing where you run the C, rip five counter type deal with the counter tray blocking? We started running that with our wing back with the double handoff, basically kind of a mixture of the double wing with the direct snap handoff, inside handoff to the wing back. And so I started mixing a little bit of that. So that was kind of a little change, because Doc, when he if he's going to give the wing back inside, he full spins. And I do both. We full spin and then do the crisscross handoff type deal. So that was a little bit different from Doc. And then as he started going more balanced, I stayed with Linus as my Wilby cushion and stayed unbalanced up until this year.
So you went more balanced this year?
Yeah. And the only reason I went balanced this year was I had a sophomore tight end that's 6'6", 205 pounds, and he hasn't grown into his body yet, but he was better down blocker and better reach blocker than any offensive lineman I had. And I wasn't going to – and he can catch and he can run. And so I didn't want to waste a 70 number on him at outside tackle. And so I just – well, we're going to go balanced because he's the best cat we got, and I got him for 3 more years.
Now, how long did you stay at Avila?
I was there for 4 years. And took the program when I got there was the first year we were junior varsity only. And you got to understand, Avalon is a school with 100 boys in the high school. And so they had a varsity team before I got there, but then they graduated a bunch of kids. They didn't have anybody, so the coach they had stepped down. And so they needed a football coach, and that entered me. And so we were a JV program first year. And then the next year we went varsity. And just like any program that goes from JV to varsity with a bunch of kids, we went 2-8 and got our butts kicked. But the best thing about the single wing that gave us that, teams that should have drubbed us in the 50-0 were only beating us 28-14. We were in a lot of games until halftime, and I only had 19 kids on the team, and so we were getting wore out and young and weak. But I had a lot of coaches come up to me and said, looking at it on paper and watching you guys warm up, I thought we were going to score 60. And, we were losing. I remember one game we lost. We were in it, and it was 16-8. And then we, had a fumble, and then we turnover after we got down 2 minutes ago. We ended up losing the game 32-8. But, they'd scored and scored again. But that was like in the final. So with 5 minutes to go in the game, we're down a touchdown. And next thing you know, we're down 3 touchdowns type deal. But, the coach, I couldn't believe that you stood that long with us. And so I think the single wing really gave us that advantage to stay in games that we shouldn't have stayed in. And those 2 games we won, we probably shouldn't have won either. But it was kind of cool. Like most guys with single wing, they'll see throughout their time when you see linebackers running each other because they're missing their keys, and they're keying backs, and one linebacker stepping with the guard, the other linebacker stepping with the back, and they collide, and there's your gap you need to get to the next level.
And how did you end up? What happened to the program? How did it develop under you?
All right, so we went 2-8, and then the next year, the third year, we go 5-5, and we were just a different team. And then that third year of varsity, I was at Avalon. We go 7-3 in the regular season, and we had a 1-game playoff for our conference championship. We won it, so we finished 8-3. And so we Maryland and the private schools, they don't have a playoff. It's just individual conferences. So we won our conference, and it just so happened that year we played John Paul the Great, my current school, and they were one of our 3 losses. They had a pretty good team. They were 9-2. And we took them down to the wire. We were down 24-18, first and goal with 8 seconds to go. And I thought we could get two plays, and we ran what I call 48 pass, you know, run pass option. And I said, whatever you do, don't go down for a loss. You got to throw it out of bounds or get out of bounds, run out of bounds. But you can't keep tackled in bounds. We didn't have a timeout, and I thought that was a safe play. And lo and behold, he got hit, and he didn't throw it away, and we got tackled, and you know, the game was over. I was hoping to get two plays out of it, if anything. But their coach was the assistant principal, and when John Paul the Great opened in 2008. They didn't hire. They thought they'd have higher enrollment than what they did, and they didn't. And so they didn't hire an extra teacher to coach. And so he, as the assistant principal, became the coach. And so after the season's over, he calls me and asks me if I can meet him someplace for a beer. And I said, yeah, I'll meet with you. And I thought he wanted to talk football because he kept asking me about the single wing. And so I'm expecting to get some questions, and I was going to prepare to. I brought the notebook to talk about it, I get there to the bar, and he's got a beer for me, and he goes, I'm stepping down as football coach. I said, oh, I'm sorry to hear it. And he goes, I want you to take my job. And I said, I got a job. And he says, write down what your salary is. And so I wrote it down, and he wrote back. He goes, this is what your salary would be here. And it was about 20 grand more. So that's all it took for me. And the next day I went and tendered my resignation.
Well, that's fantastic. You know, and you know, I visited that campus where you are right now a couple of years ago. It is sweet. You want to describe that campus to everybody?
The building itself is nothing short of fantastic. It's, you know, the best money that $60 million can buy. Yeah, you walk in, and it's truly it's a God-centered school. We're named after, you know, Pope John Paul the Great, Pope John Paul II, you know, who's our Pope from 1979 to 2005, and so when the first thing you do is you walk into school, you see the chapel, and at the in front of the chapel there's a statue of Joseph, Mary, and a teenage Jesus, which, you know, which is fitting for teenagers in high school to see a teenage Jesus. You don't see him too often. You either see an infant Jesus at Christmas, or you see the 33-year-old man on his ministry Jesus, or Jesus on the cross. You don't see that teenage Jesus. So that's kind of a cool thing when you walk in, and it really sets the tone for the school. So I'm blessed in that regard, and I'm blessed in the fact that my principal told me when I was hired, I don't care if you win every game, and I don't care if you lose every game. The only thing I do care is that you preach the gospel of Jesus Christ to the boys through the medium of football. And I'm kind of awestruck by that. And she goes, I don't want you to go out there and, you know, start preaching. I want you to coach football, but I want you to coach in a way that they know that there is truth behind it, and that winning is not everything. I want you to win. I want you to do great, but that their life lessons behind football is more important. And so that's kind of been my goal. And, you know, we've had some ups and we've had some downs, but that's the nature of this job here in the school. And so it's a great part to be a part of this community in the classroom and coaching them in football.
How many kids do you have in that school?
Right now the school's growing. So it's growing every year. The neighborhood's actually being built around it. When you were here, when you turn off the main road, there's kind of about a three-quarter mile, and there's nothing. But now the neighborhood's built up. There's a golf course built by Jack Nicklaus, and all the houses are being built. So when I got here in 2011, co-ed, we had about 500 in the school, and now we're pushing over 800. And, yeah, 400 boys, 400 girls. I think there might be about a 25 or 30. There might be 25 or 30 more girls than boys, but, you know, roughly, you know, half and half. And within our football program, 9 through 12, I get about 75 boys out every year.
Okay. Now, do you, they don't have a feeder program. Is the school just 9 through 12, right?
It is 9 through 12. Now, there are roughly four parochial schools that predominantly send their kids to John Paul. Only one of them has a football team. The nature of this area, they have the youth football programs the clubs or what have you have their teams, and so that's where most of the kids play football before they come here.
When you got there, was there a big? Did you have to sell yourself to the kids into the single wing? Oh, how did that transition take place?
No, that first group didn't. They were a split back veer team. However, they had played us, and they knew how tough it was, and so they bought right in. And the only drawback I had that first year back in 2011 was that my then 2-year-old son, Jack, was diagnosed with leukemia in week 3.
Yeah.
And like with any program, especially a new program learning the single wing, you don't get good at it in the first 5 or 6 games. I mean, you're learning it, you're running it, but you're not good at it. You know what I mean? And so when Jack got sick, that kind of took the wind out of everything. And I had turned it over for about a 3-week span to the assistants, and they were loyal and they were running the stuff. But I was the subject matter expert, but I was like the most knowledgeable of the single wing amongst that. And so when I had watched film, I noticed there were some things missing, this and that. But I had other things that were more pressing in my mind. So. Little side note, Jack is 8 years old and a wild man, and he's healthy, done with chemotherapy, and thanks be to God for that. But that was the toughest part, X's and O's wise, that first year. But they had no problem buying into it, again, because I think they saw how tough it was to defend.
And what brand of single, I mean, you say you're a little bit different than Doc. What brand of single wing do you run? Because there's a...
Okay.
Everybody has to put their own brand to it.
Yeah. We started off as full spin, spinning fullback, and then direct snap power sweep, what Doc calls the 50 series, and then half spin, both the fullback and the tailback half spinning, and then the counter tray off that. So that was really the 3 big series that we ran, and then, of course, the blocking back wedge.
Now, for somebody who's listening to this and don't know the difference between fullback and tailback, would you mind explaining that to them?
I use the terminology fullback, but Doc and I, we call him the quarterback, but he's the back. If you're in a right-handed formation, single wing formation, he's the back to the right and the tailback is to the left. Offset, we split A gap. So the quarterback's in the strong side A gap and the tailback's in the quick side A gap. And so I number my backs. The blocking back is 1, the wing back is 2, the quarterback / fullback is the 3, and the tailback's the 4. And so we number that way. So 48 for me is direct snap to the tailback. And then the other break I have from Doc is we full spin, we number who is getting the ball, who's getting the snap, and who's getting the ball. So if I'm running a full spin with a spinning fullback or spinning quarterback, we'll call 3-48, meaning the snap's going to the quarterback or fullback at 3 back, and he's handing to the 4, and he's hitting the 8 hole type deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a thing of beauty once you get it in. And, we got your highlights up and everything so people can take a look at it. And if you don't mind later on at the end, I want you to leave if you don't mind, your email address or telephone number with some of the listeners and have your holler, about it, if they have any questions and everything.
Yes, sir. I'm an open book.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And, most people will find out that most guys who run this offense or any successful guy who does anything, they're open book, They'll give you the shirt back to see that you are successful. What else differentiates the Jerry Sarge Camp single wing? What is it that's different than anybody else?
Well, just from Doc or from, I mean, I now that it just depends on the kids that I have. One thing that's really different from I guess the teams that I have are the type of kid that Doc's had, or you know, you've had, or Doug Kerr. I mean, we all have different kids and different strengths. You know, I joke, and it's serious when I say my backfield, my quarterback and tailback and wingback, they're all 4.3s, and I'm not talking 40s. I'm talking grade point average. And it's so true.
You got me on that one.
Yeah, I mean they are 100. They're really for my football team, most of the time my kids are my tailback, my nose tackle, my strong guard, and quick guard all look like the same kid out of the uniform. And it's just a matter of what they got. I mean, they're between 5'9" and 6', and they're between 160 and 190. And I just don't have big kids, and I know there's a lot of Catholic schools and private schools that do the scholarships, but I'm at the school that doesn't. And so when I look at a kid that wants to come here, I'm going to talk to about the great education, the characteristics he's going to the classroom, and I'll sell the parents on the small class size. But in the end, when they say, what can you give us, as opposed to some of the other schools around here, and I say, well, $13,000, it's all yours to have. Or you can apply for financial aid based on need, but I can't give you a scholarship in the name of football.
Mm-hmm.
And so the type of kid I got is a really smart kid, a really devout Christian Catholic kid, that type of thing. And they all go to college, just very few going to play college football. I mean, they're legitimately 4.3 grade average. And right now I just popped up on your website. I popped open that highlight and, you know, the kids on that team, one kid, he had a full ride ROTC scholarship to Richmond, and he walked onto the team, but, you know, like a typical walk-on. Another kid's got an athletic scholarship to play lacrosse, and another kid's got a full ride academic scholarship to Virginia Tech. So, I mean, they're great kids. I mean, any kid that you'd love to have as your son, they're just Division I football players. But they're smart and they're willing to do. And so the single wing has been perfect in that regard, that I throw a lot more than Doc Ward ever does. And one thing I have to do is, like, all three of them will throw and all three of them will run. And, you know, four guys are going to carry the ball in any given snap and three guys are going to throw the ball in any given snap. So that's kind of my niche, I would say, within that I do more than a lot of other single wing guys.
Now, your off-season, how do you do your off-season?
Well, being at a small school, most of the kids play a sport, and in the springtime especially. So I look at the kids in the spring, and I got a good relationship with a track coach, and I said, if they're not playing baseball or playing lacrosse, I tell them they got to run track. And I'll get all but like three kids that will run track. So in the spring, that's pretty easy because they're running, they're getting their stuff, and I like the fact that while they're in track, they're getting that competitive edge, or they're playing lacrosse, which has a ton of running. In the wintertime, a lot of them, we get about 10 or 12 kids that play that wrestle. I got a couple kids that will swim, but that's they come in after school and they lift. They get their lift in. I'm a history teacher, so that's the tough aspect. Some of them will have weight training. Unfortunately, I don't have a football coach in the PE department. And so they're getting a lift, but I think with anything else, like all football coaches, we're like, if they're not getting a football-type lift with squats and cleans, we're always thinking in the back of the head, you know, what can we do? How can we get them to get this? But, you know, the bottom line, I think, is they're in the weight room getting stronger and doing what they need to do.
Now, you talked a little bit about your staff. How many people do you have on staff?
Well, besides losing 21 starters, I lost essentially my entire staff last year. I had a complete turnover. Unfortunately, we had a coach pass away, had a coach just not return because he had moved on. I had another coach that took a job in another state. He was like me. His wife got transferred and he left. And then I had two coaches that they worked at the local Marine base, but the contract that they had expired, and the new contract, they couldn't get off work until 5 o'clock, which is way too late to come to practice.
Yeah.
So I was able to hire some good guys, and you laugh at this, my offensive staff this year, I had a kid that was 24 that just graduated from a D3 school that is going to be a rock star coach. He's rock solid. He's great and everything, but you know, he's just a recent college grad, and had a former player, my first one that played for me at the Avalon School, was the spinner back for me there. He's 22, just turned 23, so I had a combined age of 47 on my two offensive assistants this year. And so that was a little different, and then the entire defensive staff I had brand new, and so I felt like I was coordinating both sides of the ball all year long.
Well, they're going to be returning with you next year?
Yeah, I have one coach will not, but I have everyone but one back. So that's a great positive, and they've been having that continuity has been great because they've been around the weight room some more, and so that's a thing I'm looking forward to for next year because it just felt like I was teaching the coaches a couple days ahead of the kids. Yeah.
Well, you have a unique way of getting these guys to buy into what you do and everything, and it's been very successful. You know, just looking at your track record and everything. What is the most important part of the single wing game that you think that everybody needs to pay particularly attention to? If someone wants to come to you and run the single wing, what would you tell them to pay particular attention to?
I think once they sell the team that it's truly a team offense, the backs love it because, you know, even though the guy that's the quarterback, he was second on our team in touchdowns, throwing touchdowns. You know, three guys are going to throw the ball, so they really like that. And the fact that they throw for each other and they're running for each other, that builds the backs up the block. And so that eliminates a lot of the prima donna aspect. And even getting the receivers to block, kid that I probably should have thrown to him more, but he had 9 catches and 8 of them were touchdowns. And they were the type of touchdowns that, you know, you and I, old man, could run touchdowns because we had sold the run so well that, you know, he was just wide open. And you know, I kind of look back, but it's just, you know, those were kind of, it's there once a game. And then the defense, and then the nice part about it, my kids are pretty smart that, all right, we run that play, and just because I call pass, I tag the run play with pass, they know they don't pass it. So they get that one touchdown because the cornerback sucked up, and you know they get that, you know, 50, 60-yard touchdown pass. And then the next time we run it, well, the cornerback stays back, and so they run it for 15 yards, and then you say, you know, congrats, you know, good job. And so just keep emphasizing that. And so they really buy into that aspect. But I think more importantly is getting the offensive linemen. And so I took from you, Leonard, the hammer, the name the hammer, and we don't, you know, run your hammer play per se, but they have the sledgehammer. And so whoever wins the board wars that week on the offensive line gets to lead us out onto the field, and they carry a sledgehammer. And so it's great because it's the competition that they do to carry that dang sledgehammer is fascinating. And so they're working their butts off so they can have that bragging rights of carrying the sledgehammer out on the field and leading us out. And so I sell the offensive line that you lead us on the field, you're going to lead us on the field in pregame, and you're going to lead us on the field all game long, and those backs are going to follow you.
And those backs understand that those guys are the most important guys around.
Oh, absolutely. And the kid that – the spinner, the quarterback, fullback type, whatever you want to call him, he's great. He'll get in there like on a timeout, and it's whether we call timeout or they call timeout, say it's 3rd-and-1. He goes, Coach, ain't no sweat. We got it. Look at these guys. They're going to open that, and he'll use an expletive. We're going to open that shit up right there. And, you know, he just exuded that, and so the kids fed off that. And so the offensive line went, oh, he's got confidence in me? Shoot, this is too easy. And I had And so as a play caller, it would be great when we would get within that. You know, if it's third and two, I knew I had two plays. And the kids knew they had two plays. You know, we're not going to punt the ball in fourth and one. You know, we're getting it right there. And so I think that whole mentality is fed into and bought into. And then when you got these kids that are 170, 180, 190 pounds blocking 240, 250, and I tell you, it's not pretty, but they run their SAB rules. They stay on their tracks. They kick out. They got their head upfield. One of the best blocking backs I had, he's a junior now at West Point, 145-pound blocking back, and he never did anything that was highlight reel worthy, but he had his head upfield, and he got his body between the defensive end and the ball carrier, and he created a hole. And so that's the kind of things that they buy into, because we're winning games with kids like that over big kids.
Did you get much pushback from your community when you introduced this?
Not really, because the success kind of took care of itself. There was a little bit. I've had a couple kids transfer out that they came in here, and the kid's a drop back passer, and I've used some drop back passers as I put them in at wing back, or I'll put them in at wide receiver, and we'll run a double pass, or we'll run something where the kid will throw it. And I think one of the best touchdowns we ever threw was this kid that, and I actually named an award after this kid. He tried to be a spinner as a junior, but he wouldn't block. We'd run 46 and he wouldn't lead up through the hole, and he kind of wore a skirt, danced, and he says, "I never blocked. I've always been a quarterback." And I benched him, and he pouted for a while. And off season, I said, if you want to play quarterback, you got to block. If you want to get on the field, and that's not your thing, and the kid we had at spinner was pretty good. He was a sophomore, going to be a junior. And so, if I have a choice between a junior and a senior, and the junior's better, I'm playing that junior because I get more miles out of him. And so he saw the writing on the wall that he wasn't going to play, and so he turned around and played free safety, was voted by his peers captain, and had a heck of a year. Had like 7 interceptions, and he ended up returning punts and was all state as a punt return guy. I think he returned 2 or 3 to the house. But I put him in, and one of the best highlights was I put him in and flat. We ran a reverse pass, and he threw it, and the kid had a cannon. He threw it like 55 yards in the air to the kid in the end zone. It was, most beautiful pass. And he jokes that he never had that much time when he played quarterback. And I said, of course not, because when you drop back pass, they all got their ears pinned back. But when you run a little slot reverse, you've just lessened your rush. And so I actually named the coach's award after this kid because, he went from being a kind of a powder, prima donna quarterback that wouldn't block anybody to, an all-state punt returner and a 7 interception, free safety that, had a great year and really took me by surprise about how much of a leader he became, because I really didn't expect him to step up like that.
He's still there, or has he gone on to school?
This was 2013, fall of 13. So he graduated from here in 14. So he's in college.
Okay. The game didn't move for him then, and then he did for the game, it looks like.
Yeah, the majority of high school athletes across the country, the game does more for them than they do for the game. And that's the majority of my kids. I have one kid that walked on to Richmond, one kid that's playing at Catholic University here in D.C. at Division III, and one kid playing at the Merchant Marine Academy in Division III. So I don't have I most likely will have the kid that I moved, that he's going to be a junior, 6'6", 205, tight end. He's probably going to be Division I. But other than him, I don't have, big kids that are going to come out there and awe you with, the talent and all that. So it's for us, we have to play as that team. We don't have that one spectacular athlete that's just going to take over the game.
Is it safe to say that you don't have any academic issue at your school?
No, that's safe to say. When I look at the clearinghouse, I look at it and I know it for recruiting purposes. especially to know the kids, if a kid wants to come to me and transfer in to play and get that opportunity. But I don't really fret about it, because if they don't have the clearinghouse, they're not going to be in school by that junior senior year. If they're not, because we require 28 credits to graduate, 4 maths, 4 Englishes, 3 foreign languages, 4 social studies. I mean, it's 2.5 credits of ethics. And the ethics courses aren't easy courses. And so we get that. And so the kid that I have here isn't in danger of not meeting the clearinghouse.
I can imagine.
Now, what I do have, Leonard, is I'll have parents that will take their kids and suspend them for a game because he's got an 82%. And I know John Ward and you and some other coaches I know would say, 82% in pre-calculus? All right. You know, 82% in Algebra 1? All right. You know, this kid with, that's, you know, because borderline C, that they're suspending this kid. So I've had that. So I have an opposite issue sometimes.
Now, what about your faculty, and do you got good working relationships with them and everything as far as cooperation?
Yeah, they're great. They sometimes ignorant is bliss. I got a great faculty, and not saying they're ignorant, but they're sometimes a little sports ignorant in a way that they don't know, and so I don't think they care. You know, if we run the single wing or the lonesome polecat, they wouldn't tell you. They couldn't tell you the difference. I mean, they're very, very, very intelligent, and sometimes I feel like the dumb guy in the room at the lunchroom in the conversations. Just, you know, you and I would talk about cover three the way they're talking about, some aspect of biology or chemistry. It's beyond me. So that's a little bit different. But the one thing of being an alpha male in this environment is they have no compunction about coming to me when a kid is cutting up in class. And so, and I tell that every year at the very first faculty meeting, if it's short of axe murder, come to me. If a kid is openly cheating on something and something that's got to go up on the academic chain, then, you know, I'm going to support whatever punishment. But if it's a kid that's cutting up, a kid that's coming late to class because he's kissing little, you know, Sally Jane in the on his way to class and he's late, come to me. And they do. And so it's great that I'll see the fear of God in their eyes as soon as they see that teacher send an email my way. And then I, you know, after practice, I'll, you know, have my little things and say, all right, you know, Johnny, Joey, and Jimmy, say after. And, you know, we do some reminders, what have you. And so that's probably the best thing that I have going for me on this campus, is that they will come to me before they go to administrator.
Well, that's good. And how is your administration? I know you had a good hide. You still there?
Yeah, I'm here. The head principal, the principal is a Dominican sister, and she's great. She's the one that, you know, don't care if you win or lose, just you know. And then the two assistant principals, the dean of academics and the dean of students, both of their sons play for me right now, and so they're great. I mean, sometimes they have to do what they have to do. If a teacher doesn't bring a kid to me, to the dean of students, and it's brought to him, and sometimes he'll let me know, and he won't punish him, and he'll let me deal with it. And sometimes if it's an issue that he's got to tell me, I got to take care of this. And, you know, it's like that part's like any other school. If it gets to that level, then dude, there's nothing I can do. And I look at the kid, you done screwed up type deal. And so, but for the most part, they will bring little things to me that I can fix at my level for that young man.
You do have those little issues yourself too, like we all do.
Yeah. I mean, they're teenage kids. I mean, they're boys, and they screw up just like everyone else.
You do a lot of clinics. You want to share with the guys who are listening just how important going to these clinics are.
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking to single wing clinics, it's great to network. It's great to get to know other guys, because as soon as you think, I think John Wood had said the best, it's what you learn after you know it all is what counts the most. And so as soon as you think you know all what you're going to run, and you go and you learn something new. And so, for example, this year I didn't have a kicker, and what I learned from you, Leonard, was I run the beast on two-point plays, and we run Chicago and Seattle and, you know, well, what you call cut. I changed some of the names to NFL teams. And the tailback or whoever the lone back makes that read, and we're going to run the power sweep, wedge, counter. And so that was cool. So I think it's cool. And now, I would say to the young coach especially, don't go to a clinic thinking you're going to overhaul your system. You got to run what you run. Now, like for example, my example of learning from this last year's symposium, what Coach Johnson does with the beast on his two-point plays is he goes out there and they read it, and they make the play, and you know, you're only talking 3 yards, and so get it done. And so I took from that. That was like the one change I got. So go there and find the one thing that you can improve upon or maybe add. I wouldn't say go in there and try to find, you know, three different series that you're going to implement all at once. When I go to the Glaziers or I go to like a Nike clinic or what have you, I actually like going to the defense stuff more. Cause number one, I like hearing what they have to say about what they try to do and some of the different nuances they do. And also just for my own frame of mind, like, you know, just to learn some more about defense. I mean, I can learn something going and listen to a spread guy talk, but in my mind, I'm not going to be out there running the fancy RPOs where we're going to, you know, read that defensive end and do that stuff. And so I kind of just don't even waste my time with that.
Well, when you run a system, and this is what I call it, a system, you can basically do anything you want to do with it and not get crazy. It kind of limits you in a good way, because you don't go out there and try to run everybody else stuff. And what you do is you cherry pick and say, now can I fit this into what we're doing? Can I make this work? Now my English is going crazy tonight. You have spoken at a couple of clinics and everything. How was that experience?
It's good in the way that, you know, getting out there and speaking. I spoke at a couple different glaziers beyond the single wing community. And so the networking there has been great. And for me, the actual preparation to speak is I have to go back and I have to look at what we did. And so it forces me in a way to self-scout, because I'm watching everything critically of how I'm going to teach it. And I can say this as a teacher, I know way more about my subject matter that I teach than I ever did as a student. And same goes for football and coaching. I know way more subject matter as far as X's and O's than I ever did as a player. You know, because I have to sit there and learn it and do it. And so that's one thing that teaching does. And so I enjoy that aspect as a coach, to learn of teaching has forced me to look at myself more critically than I probably would have. So I take that akin to having my boys run track. Yeah, they're running, but are they going to run that 100 meters as fast racing somebody, or just, you know, running sprints for me after weightlifting?
And the system you use in your with your weightlifting, what system is that?
It's,
and I know everybody...
Yeah, it's kind of a takeoff of Bigger, Faster, Stronger, but we've changed up the BFS system to kind of fit what we do. Like, for example, the BFS has like the box squat and the towel bench on Mondays, and the cleans and the deadlifts on Wednesdays, and the bench and squat on Friday. And so what I've done is we clean and squat on Monday and Friday, and we'll bench press and deadlift on Wednesday. And we still follow the 3-3, the 5-5 type deal. And then we have auxiliary lifts beyond that, based upon those, you know, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, different focus of the auxiliary lifts. But we core lift with those major lifts that we record and try to beat our maxes type deal.
I've always said that's the best program for anybody who does not have a coherent program to run. It's the best program to start with, and it's so flexible that you can, once you learn it, you can just about do anything you can with it to do, you know, to keep up with everything that's going on there.
Yeah. And one of the things we have is we have a bell in the weight room. So when a kid's going for a new max, and it can be a 3-rep max, it could be a 5-rep max, it could be, you know, 6-rep max on 10-8-6, we ring the bell, and the guys will come around and get that, you know, we'll cheer them on and go for that. So that's always fun to do.
Now, do you have all your kids in there at one time? Do you have a weight class, or do you do those after school?
Mine's after school. So the thing is the people in the weight training class, they do whatever the weight training teacher has. So mine specifically, but I just took the praxis for health and physical education and passed it. And so I am a certified health and physical education teacher now. So I'm trying to work my way into transferring from social studies to health and PE.
I think they're going to make that work. Don't you think so?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Well, I sweetened the deal. I got, maybe I didn't, but I got certified to teach driver's education as well. So our PE2 is driver's education as well. It's half PE and half driver's ed. So trying to make myself more valuable as a teacher, so I can teach multiple things.
Okay, it'd be kind of hard, really, when you don't do that. One question: if you could spend time with a coach and he give you 90 minutes to spend time with, who would that coach be?
If I could spend 90 minutes with any coach, Lombardi, maybe, either him or, like, alive though.
It doesn't matter.
Besides Doc Ward, I'd say George Rykovich.
Mm-hmm. Now, you want to explain people who George Rykovich is.
George, Manitou Springs, Colorado. He's the father of the T-Series. But the way he teaches the single wing, it's just, he's so effortless. He's so knowledgeable in his stuff. And I don't know how old George is. He's got to be pushing 80. Looks like he's about 55. But he's a dynamic coach, and he really knows the game of football.
And you would want to pick his brain on the T-Series or what?
The T-Series, game preparation, practice planning, program building, you name it. I guess he and then the other guy, Hofer out of Menominee. Yeah, you know, just the way they've been successful year in, year out.
You know, and a lot of guys say, well, that thing don't work and all that stuff. I say, well, when you sit down and really study the offense, there's no reason why it cannot work. You know, it's
you're exactly right. It's the matter of once the kids buy in, I think everything takes care of itself because we have answers for everything. Now, I mean, with the exception of if they're bigger, badder, stronger, and better than you, it kind of doesn't matter what you run.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've all ran into that team. But
boy,
if it's, yeah, I look at a team, unless they're, you know, the Green Bay Packers, if they're slightly better than me or equal to, I'm winning that football game. I just feel that in my heart. Now, I haven't always done that. I mean, we've dropped some games, but I feel that if we're that close, I'm beating you. If we're equal or I'm a little bit better, I'm probably scoring 50 on you. And then if I'm completely dominant, then, you know, I won't score 50. I'll score my 35 and get the clock running, and we'll leave there at that. You know, I try not to embarrass teams like that. I've been pretty good throughout my time of beating teams 42-0, keeping it under 50. And that's just, to me, that's a little bit of play calling. It's also a little bit of class within your kids that they're going to step out of bounds rather than take that after 35 yards and just keep it going. Now, I mean, I've had scored 60, and sometimes you can't help it if you score 3 defensive touchdowns in a game. But other than those two areas where you're much better than, or you're much worse than, you should always be in the game.
And that's what the single wing does for everybody. It keeps you, you know, it keeps you around. It gives you,
yes, it gives you a chance.
It gives your kids a chance to be successful and everything. How good are you going to be this year?
I think we'll be much better. We're going to be. I think it was 9 sophomores that started this year. So, right there, we lost 3 games we should have won last year that we had the lead or were tied in the fourth quarter that they didn't know how to win yet. And it was just kicks in the teeth that will pay dividends in the future. They got that, and they've been hungry in the off season, and they've been showing up, and they've been doing that, and they have a good attitude. And so I think those guys are going to, when it gets close and it gets crunch time, that they're going to react better. And I can tell you that when 2012 we had a down season and we turned around in 2013 and made the playoffs. And it was a similar concept. We had a bunch of kids, a bunch of sophomores. We had 2 freshmen back then. And it really paid off. And so then I had a 3-year run with those kids that really learned how to win. And so I think it's just we were down, which in a way is good because it takes some pressure off, because when you have a couple – winning seasons and playoff runs, that you go from the hunter to the hunted. And so we're no longer the hunted, we're the hunter again. And so that's going to make us in a better spot, better place to be.
Up against that owl. And I
yep.
know you got to spend some time with your babies and everything.
Yep.
And I really appreciate you coming on, you know, in the middle of the week and everything. And I appreciate you being flexible. Are you going to Pennsylvania?
I will.
Okay.
I'm actually presenting.
You are? Oh, that's fantastic. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Maybe I can get you back on there again, because I kind of learned some things about what I have here, you know, and I'm going to try to do some shows from up there, you know, to the single wing world and everything. Anything finally you want to say?
No, I appreciate it. It's been great, and I look forward to seeing you when you get up to PA.
Take care, my man, and I'll talk to you
later. All right,
take
care. God bless. Bye-bye.
Good. Well, guys, that's the great Jerry Sanchez. He's a better person when you meet him in person than he is, you know, coming across the radio and everything. Guy who will give you just about anything he wants. And as they say in our neighborhood, he's real. You know, he's a good, genuine guy, and he'll give you the shirt off his back. And again, I forgot to get him to give you information, but I'll hit him up and see if I can get his email and telephone number if you want to hit him up with some questions and everything, and get there. Well, we're about to shut it down for the night, guys, and we'll be back on Sunday, our regular time at 6:00. And we got the great Justin Dana from the Lee Central High School right here in South Carolina. Justin has done a great job with that program there, actually turning it around. And I have his bio and everything up. And he's a good young coach. And he's really doing some great things down there at Lee Central High School. And you're going to enjoy him. So we're going to get out of here and see if I can get me a ID. Coming up at practice and everything this afternoon. So we're going to try to get a bit of my music, find music or something and everything. Listen, let's go crazy. Trees of green. Can't get along. Take this more after we start talking to at each other. My biggest thing is that, just stop respecting each other again. What a wonderful world. Stop loving each other. We'll see you Sunday at 6:00. Great job today. And clouds of white. The bright, blessed day. The dark, sacred night. And I think to myself,
what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue, clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They're like much more. I never knew, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Show you, hug somebody, and tell them you love them tonight. Good night, guys. Talk to you Sunday.